Welcome to Rule Breakers for Gender Equality. My name is Nancy Polian, and I'm on a mission to make the top of the business world more diverse and inclusive. Because to me, rule breaking is all about taking a risk. The risk to be yourself and to create your own career path. In 2021, there were more CEOs named Peter than women CEOs in the Netherlands. This is one of the rules that I want to break. Let's see which business leader is breaking the rules today. Welcome, everybody. This is my very first live broadcast. And we're doing it, yes, woohoo! We can't say woohoo. We are doing it at an amazing place called Great Place to Work. I've got a special co-host with me today for this rule-breaking podcast. Her name is Wenke Esther Lorber. Woohoo! So, Wenke.
Yes.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yes, great to have you.
Tell me a little bit about Great Place to Work, because maybe some people don't know about it.
They should. But actually, we are an organization that helps you survey your employees and makes actionable insights uncoverable and can get your company recognized for its great company culture.
So what do you actually do? Do you do polling? Is it training? Tell us about what you actually do.
Yes, we do surveys. Okay. And what we do is that we survey employees at the workplace.
So you ask them questions about how happy they are.
Not happy, but how connected they are to their workplace and which level of trust they experience at their workplace.
Okay. So we're going to talk about leadership today because I really feel that this is the time for a new kind of leadership.
Definitely.
I mean, we've all seen the news. We've talked about Me Too and what's been happening. Mm-hmm. And also millennials and Zoomers are looking for different kinds of leadership. Yeah. And we invited somebody very special, Jayani Masthoff, to talk about this. She's not only the co-founder and owner of GoudVC, which is an amazing agency that she's going to tell you about. She's also a cognitive neuropsychologist. Whenever I speak to Jayani, I always feel like I'm gaining lots of new insights. So I'm happy that she's going to be sharing all of her insights with you today. Welcome, Jayani.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about GoudVC. You started GoudVC a couple of years ago. Well, many years ago.
Many years ago.
Yeah, it's almost a decade, right?
Yeah. But GoudVC, we want to create working spaces where people can just be who they are. Mm-hmm. Because when everybody can be who they really are, they can contribute everything. And that is the best situation for an organization, because then you have the best of everybody. Mm-hmm. And as long as people really can be themselves, because that's not easy, that's something I think leadership is really important.
So give me a practical example. You go into these companies and you can see that there's teams that are not functioning or maybe a leader that's not functioning. How do you handle that? How do you handle these difficult situations? Maybe you can give us, because I know you do something called gamification, and what is that about?
Well, we transformed our knowledge about how to create working spaces where people can be who they are. Also to serious gaming, because on one hand, you don't always need us, especially it would be nice if you wouldn't need us and that you were able to have the difficult conversations yourself, because I think one of the things that leaders should be doing, having the uncomfortable conversations and facilitating them. It's not that you have to own them because your whole team owns it, but that you as the leader should really be focusing on having the uncomfortable conversations, because if you don't, it will be a dysfunctional pattern in the long term.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what we see in society right now.
Because they're just basically shoving it under the rug.
Exactly.
They're not having, because they don't want to be confrontational, because they think that that is bad leadership.
A bad leadership, or maybe it's even unsafe.
Yeah.
Because we're talking a lot about creating a safe environment. Mm-hmm. But being uncomfortable is something different than being unsafe. And not addressing the uncomfortability makes it unsafe.
Yeah.
When you can really do it together, have the uncomfortable conversation, you make it safe.
Yeah.
But it's also that they're not always equipped to having that conversation, to lead that conversation. So that's why we also created serious games, so that together as a team, you can have that conversation and also having fun, but also seeing the good, because it's not always the uncomfortable conversation. It's not always bad things. It's also about the good things.
So the games, how would they come into play? So you would, have a meeting and
and then turn that into a game kind
exactly.
of environment.
So you can, we have a game called House of Light and Shadow, because you have your house. There are a lot of things that are in the light. You have to celebrate them. You have to strengthen them, empower them, but you also have things in your shadow. And if you're not willing to look at the shadow side of your organization or your team, yeah. that will fester. Mm-hmm. So looking together at the shadow side as well is already acknowledgement. It's already acknowledging what's going on, what people feel, but nobody is telling each other. And so they could come together in a team session and just start playing that game. And it gives them new perspectives. They see their own patterns, but they can also laugh about it. But they also having real conversations. And I think it comes down to have the real conversation, to really talk about it. And then the next steps are not only talking about it, but okay, if this is true, this has happened to you, this has happened to you, who do we want to be together?
Yeah, as a company, which is where, you know, you're always focused on asking these companies, because I think some companies get really insulted when they don't become a great place to work, right? How does that work?
Yeah, in fact, you don't have to speak of insulting. It's about growing great and the road to greatness. So in fact, it really doesn't matter what your scores are, because you have always things that can be better.
Yeah.
And in fact, we are in it together. So if you are willing to change, and if you have the growth mindset of leadership, is willing to change, then it really doesn't matter whether your score is 96 or 52 or whatever. And I think the main reason to...
But don't you experience that some leaders are so focused on that score because that's also the kind of leadership that they are taught, like they have to win?
Yes, they are focused, but that's only the beginning. In fact, they are more willing to open up themselves once they have the real insights, not the score. So, and I think it has to do with bravery and being open and being brave enough to have that tough conversation.
Yeah.
So... and I think it's a big role for leadership. So my question to you was also, what do leaders need to focus on when it comes to having the tough conversation? What do you think they have to develop?
I think, first of all, the mindset that it's a real profession.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of people who... Some became a leader because that was the next step in their career move in the organization.
Yeah.
And the... but also some, when they come from school, they already think, okay, I'll be a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a real profession. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you need skills for, but you have to develop them continuously. Mm-hmm. Having uncomfortable conversations also makes it, your company changes as well. So the conversations change as well. That's first of all. So the mindset that it's a real profession and that you have to develop yourself. So
actually maybe follow a leadership training.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which a lot of leaders haven't.
Or only once.
Yeah.
Or after 10 years. Yeah. Or, you know, it's something that you have to do every year.
Yeah.
But also find other people around you who are really different voices, who don't think that everything you say is great, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have people around you who say, okay, this is something that you're really good at, but I'm good at this, and we need to connect.
Yeah.
And but also your team, that they are willing and safe, that they can tell you that what you did there, that was not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Or what you did do here, that's wonderful. Let's grow on that. But that's for you already to create that your team is safe enough, brave enough to do it. Because I think a lot of leaders underestimate the power of power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So telling people, oh, my door is open, you can always come in.
Yeah.
Sorry for the language, bullshit.
Yeah.
Because
and why is it bullshit? Why doesn't it work? Why don't people, you know, when you say that to somebody, they don't walk in the room? And we've all experienced it. So why, what's holding us back?
Because you are higher in hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And
so they look up to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even without knowing it, that's how an organizational system works. That's how you look at your parents as well.
Yeah.
They are different. You talk different to them. You don't say everything to them, what you would say to other people.
No.
That's also in an organization. And I think in the Netherlands, a lot of people say, oh, no, we are really a flat organization.
Yeah.
That's not true. No. In the end, the person who has the last word in the end, that person should really know that you have power.
Yeah.
And in a good way and in a bad way. And you have to be conscious about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to say to our audience that you can ask us questions, and you know, we can even run some polls. If there's something that you like to ask to Jayani or Venka, please let us know. What I love about this whole leadership thing is that you are actually a leader. When did you start seeing yourself as a leader?
Wow. the first time I saw myself as a leader was when I worked at a boarding school in Sri Lanka. I was 26 and I had 76 children, 24 hours a day, and I was responsible for them. And I was really doing a bad job the first 3 months because I had no idea what I was doing at all. And they were going around and they did not listen until they were being hit.
Oh, wow. So hitting helped.
Yeah, but I didn't do that.
Yeah. No.
So I thought I can't be the person here, the leader who takes them to other, you know, because I don't hit them. So I went back to my headmaster and I said, okay, I have to quit because I'm not good at this job. I'm not. And he said, why not? Well, because they hit the children and I'm not hitting them. And then he told me, well, we're not allowed to hit them. It's just still that they can't do. They don't know what to do else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just desperate. So they start hitting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, well, then I have to stay here because then I have to change this. Because if, you know, if it's not allowed and we're still doing it, then we are having the wrong conversations with each other. So first of all, I broke all the sticks, which was a bad move because I took away what they did know, you know. Yeah. So I learned that in a harsh way. But then I started asking the children to every Friday to act like me. Mm. So I got my mirror and I saw what I was doing. And then I thought, oh, I have to step it up. But I also...
What do you mean step it up?
Step it up that they saw my behavior and they knew exactly what I was doing. So if they knew what I was doing, then I needed to know what I was doing and why.
Yeah.
So then I figured out I have to learn more about myself and know what triggers me and where it comes from. But also I could tell them, oh, that's a bad thing what I did there. And I said, oh, no, miss, that's you. So it was also about acceptance and also my own shadow side, accept my own shadow side. But then I figured out, okay, I want to lead this. I want to have these 76 children become the next president of Sri Lanka.
Yes.
So how are we going to do that?
Yeah.
So that's when I first felt like a leader, a failing leader, but then,
one of my favorite quotes is actually that good leaders actually empower because they know it's not about them.
And they dare to care.
Yeah.
As in they dare to care for their employees or for the people in the school, for the children, open up, and having the conversation.
So they kind of realize that they are at service.
Exactly.
They're at service for something bigger than them. Whether it's a higher purpose.
Way bigger.
And it's not what you said. It's not about you.
No.
So I also tell some of my team members who are now in the management team, it's not about you. You all have always to be the first person who steps over his own shadow.
Yeah.
You have always to be the first person who says, okay, what do we learn from this? What can we do? But also say, where are boundaries? You know, you have always to be the first person to recognize, okay, what's going on? What do I need to do? And that to get yourself out of the equation.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's about the bigger goal, the impact that you want to have as an organization, the impact that you want to have on your team members, and to really let them be who they are. Because well, my team members are really exceptional and I love them. But also we have the tough, you know, conversations. Yeah. And they are tough. Sometimes I really have to talk to myself in the mirror and say, okay, you need to have that conversation.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I have friends and my girl tribe who I can, you know, we can go to and say, okay, I'm having a difficult situation or I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. But you need people around you because... It's also lonely.
It's very lonely.
But how do you do it? How do you have those difficult conversations with, you know, the different generations from you? And I'm talking about the Zoomers here and the millennials who are not used to having difficult conversation. I'm actually having something at work right now where I'm trying to have difficult conversation, but you can see that it's so uncomfortable to have that conversation, even though you know that that person's going to grow with that conversation. So there's also a generational issue here.
I don't know. I think every person is different. And if we, you know, if we put it in boxes, then we have reasons why not to do it.
Yeah. So it's like an excuse then. Exactly. Because you're like, I can't talk to them because they're a assumer. Yeah. So I don't want to, you know, insult them or, yeah.
Exactly.
It's about you then. Yeah. And you really have to have the bravery to connect with them and ask them the questions and really listen. And that's so difficult for every leader
and
to
listen.
And it's
also about what you said at the beginning. You said that you create work environments where people can be themselves. Mm-hmm. But if you're not yourself as a leader,
exactly,
then you're not functioning either. So exactly. It's not just about the employees being themselves.
No,
the leader has to be.
Yeah, yeah. And it's what Jayani earlier stated. It's I think 60% of leadership in the Netherlands is transactional. They learned how to be a leader, or they were very good at their jobs, but they are very transactional. They don't connect with their people.
Explain that word.
Yeah, transactional means that I give you the order to do something and you do it right or you do it wrong.
Okay.
And but I don't connect with you as a person. So I can't get you the opportunity to grow. Because I don't know who you are, what your interests are, who you are as a person, not only as an employee. And I really think that you can be a good, an okay leader with okay results. Mm-hmm. But when you want to be exceptional with your company, and when you want to face like the bigger problems, like reducing carbon footprint or facing with pandemic, you really have to connect with your people because they have to. Even they have to stand out, and they have to leverage even more than they should, because your company wants to grow. But that also means that you have to be vulnerable as a leader too. It's so difficult because we are taught in business school that you leave your personal life at home. So you have to be very brave to show your vulnerability towards your employees.
So we need new
employees.
School in leadership, because if they're still teaching this in business school, this
I don't
is
know
like,
whether they're teaching it now, because everyone's talking about new leadership. But in fact, I don't know how many companies are really practicing the terms of being a new leader. I don't know whether companies know how to do that, to be honest. But I'm very curious about your opinion.
Well, the companies that come to us, they are aware of it. So we have leadership
programs.
They
are aware of the problem.
Yes.
Yeah, they understand that leadership is a profession and that you have to do something about it. But it's also sometimes that they haven't done anything for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not only the individual leader, but as an organization, you really, you know, they are, the leaders can create your culture.
Yes.
But they can also make it a different culture than that you would want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That's what I also mean with don't underestimate the power of power.
Yeah,
there is so much power in leadership. And I can see that sometimes a lot of things happen in an organization with a leader that is so difficult for the leader to understand what's going on here. Because you have to understand the system within your organization. You have to understand individuals. You have to understand yourself. You have to figure out what kind of change is needed in the organization. If that all has to come from one person.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. So you have to help the leader and have leadership programs.
Especially in big organizations. I mean, if it's a small organization, you can oversee it a little bit better. Yeah. Because there's a little bit of a flatter structure. But if it's so many layers and...
Especially when there are so many layers. Because when you're middle management, imagine the forces that are working on them.
Yeah.
You have the upper level. You have the people in your team. You have the others. And it all... it's so difficult, and they have to understand where they are, and they have to understand what can we do. And especially when from somewhere in the top layer, it's being said, okay, we have a cultural change because the world is going.
Let's change culture. Yes.
And then, you know, they are really in the middle.
Is that why so many women basically stop after middle management? I think we solved the problem. Here,
we solved it. We solved it.
No, but really,
so
it is.
So many companies lose women at middle management. Yeah. Is that because there's so much pressure on them that they are, you know, their performance is under a microscope or something, and it's too much.
There's so much pressure on them. So because middle management is a hard job.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the toughest,
doesn't matter. Husband. I marry every no. If you're a man or a woman, if you're an exception in that role, so
like
if you're not the norm,
or,
then it's even harder because then the lights are really on you.
Yeah,
and then even if you do things different, which is what was supposed to happen, but people are not used to it, you will get powers working on you that's really harsh and difficult.
So we're talking about unconscious bias here against that woman.
It's not unconscious bias because then it would be on people.
Yeah.
It's within the system.
It's a systemic
problem. The structures.
Yeah.
And so it's bigger. And that's also why I think that leadership in these days should be really more concerned about knowing the organizational system.
Yeah.
What is working here? Because if you every time that you think that it's about individuals, then you send individuals on training and then the problem is over.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's more. No. It's in structures, in your mechanisms. It's in how you promote people. It's in everything.
Yeah.
And that's why leaders should really know what's going on, because you are in a power position and you are able to change it. But when you're middle management, you need the other layers as well. And that's why it's so difficult. And that's why I think so many women stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because having to carry that burden every day, all day, that's too much. You can't ask that of any person at all.
Okay, so we should stop asking it.
Exactly. We should.
And how do we
it.
Do that? How do we change that? So if I go to a company, I can identify the problem, right? I can literally tell them, this is why these women are leaving, because this is happening. What advice would you give them? What's the first step that they could take to change this?
Well, we then also need to know, what is the norm?
Yeah.
So what? Who's your norm employee?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Every company has them.
Yeah.
A norm employee. Yeah. I've never heard about that, but we should write that down. Who is your norm employee?
Yeah.
And then if you know what characteristics a norm employee has, and it's not only the visible ones. Eh?
Yeah.
It's also because an extrovert or an introvert, companies are built around extroverts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you, then you also know what is outside the norm.
Yeah.
So how are we going to expand the norm so that it includes everybody, anything? Then you have to look at, what does that mean for the structures in place?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What needs to change?
Mm-hmm.
And then also you have to look at your leadership and how to equip them with this change, but also to do it together. I see a lot of times that they have special, only the women need something, but the men need something as well.
Yeah.
So they're looking at the behavior, because they identified the problem, which is women are leaving. So they think they only have to solve it with the women and not with the attitudes of the men, who might cause the women to actually leave as well.
Yeah, and without them knowing it.
Yeah, unconsciously,
Yeah, so I really think that it's really important that a lot of people have no idea what's happening. They don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what you have to do in your organization to get it all on the table.
Is that what happens when you come in?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. In fact, what we do is make those insights actionable. So a data brings you a lot of information when it comes to where are the gaps here and the blind spots. And in fact, that's what we make visible. And data is quite visible. So, and then you can have the team of Jayani, for example, coming in and making those changes.
So you're analyzing the situation. Yeah. You're basically saying, this is what's happening, which is what you're saying. This is should be the first step. You should be in the know. What you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
So you've got to make sure that you know.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing a company can do when they want to look at leadership in a different way, is find out what they don't know.
Yeah, and not only leadership, but mainly also the employees and how they are perceiving leadership. It's not about what the truth is, it's about perception. But perception is about behavior. So, and that's what leaders should be aware of. on how do I, yeah, what do people see from me and how do I behave in a company?
Yeah. So let's talk about what makes a really good leader. Mm. Because for me, leaders are also great role models, especially because, you know, what we're talking about during Women's Visibility Week is getting more women into leadership positions and more women to make themselves visible, because obviously they're role models. Mm-hmm. You know, if a woman does something, there's so many other women looking at her and saying, oh, well, if Jayani can do it, then so can I. It gives them extra courage. So what do you think makes a good leader?
Well, I think that everything that we just said makes it up. It's being really you.
Mm. Yeah.
Being authentic.
So that means you have to look at yourself.
Yeah. You have to look at yourself first.
On a yearly basis.
Continuously
basis. You need different. So you need your leadership program. You need your really friends who say, okay, but you know that when you do this, people can think that,
yeah,
you know.
I had that yesterday.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, it was just somebody from my team who, because I was a little bit annoyed and we had the breakfast and something went wrong. And they came up to me when the women were actually chatting and they said to me, you know, you don't have the right energy right now. You look really pissed off. This mm-hmm. is not the Nancy that we're used to. And I was so glad that she said that to me, because I wasn't conscious of it. So she's like, she said that about 10 minutes in, so I could rectify it.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you need somebody who has the guts
exactly.
to actually say that and be like, you're not being nice. And, you know, exactly. your energy is a little bit off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you need to surround yourself with people who tell you that so that you will be able to create it in your own company or with your own team or to create a situation where people, what you said, are brave enough.
Let's call them criticasters. Maybe. Is it that?
No.
Why not?
Because it's not the critique. It's just helping you having to see your blind spot.
Is it about a mirror? Yeah.
Yeah. It's about just making sure that every person just, you know, you go to your safe space. You go to where you feel that
comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And you need other people who expand that vision and say, but this is also you.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I can be really a nice person and I can also be a horrible, nasty person.
Yeah.
And that's the same person with the same intentions, with the same impact that I want to have on every team member. And I can still be a nasty person. And in the moment itself, I don't even know that. So that you can create a context in which people can say, hey, you, not so nice.
Yeah.
So I think that being vulnerable is something that you don't know the answers. I have no clue sometimes. Because I'm doing everything for the first time also. Mm-hmm. But I also know that I can trust on what we've built together that we will get there.
Yeah.
So that's also, I think a lot of leaders always think that they need to have all the answers. Yeah.
But isn't that because, let's say you're in a corporate environment, they expect you to know the answers. You know, whether it's the shareholders, the stakeholders, you know, they kind of look at you. So what I've noticed is women go into meetings and they want to have all the answers. They sometimes start acting like men just so it looks like they have all the answers, instead of sort of reinforcing a different kind of leadership, a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And that actually creates all these layers, because it makes them less vulnerable. Because if you're always winning, you're always, you know, somebody said that to me the other day. She's like, oh, I was having this meeting with this person and I know both of them. And she's like, why does she always come in a meeting winning? There's nothing ever that goes wrong. There's always like, we did an amazing job. Everybody's happy. It's just like score, score, score.
Yeah.
So there's no vulnerability there.
There's no vulnerability. No. So then, and you started it with that. It is expected that everybody, I don't know if it is it expected.
We expect it
from now, ourselves. But I think it's an assumption
from
which we start without even trying to challenge it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also see a lot of leaders, when you really talk to them, then everybody needs to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Everybody says it's really hard. And when they challenge the assumption that do we really need to know all the answers, then people will tell, oh no, I'm okay with you not knowing, but just telling me that you don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah. So there needs to be communication. You need to be transparent about your vulnerability. You need to tell people. But I think there are, we are still now working also with the old paradigm, you know, and and we're thinking that we're changing it, but we're acting the same.
Yeah.
So you should be challenging. Is it, do you expect me to know everything? Because I don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it should be questions on the table instead of that you think, oh, but I should know because the organizational forces are working like that, but nobody understands them anymore.
But this happens also in non-leadership situations. Again, yesterday at the breakfast, somebody at the end of the breakfast came up to me and said, my hand was here underneath the table. I had so many questions I wanted to ask, but in my head, they were boring. They weren't interesting enough. Mm. They were, so she didn't raise her hand, but she had so many questions. So ladies out there, please raise your hands. Because what I told her was that with her limiting herself, she's also not helping us because there might be some really great ideas that we get from her questions or things that we haven't thought about. And if we did think about it, then we're happy she asked it because, you know, somebody asked the question at least. So there's always progress happening if you ask questions. Like my mom always used to say, there are no dumb questions. Please ask your questions.
And this is where leadership comes in.
Exactly.
They but they have to challenge you to ask questions.
Yeah.
All the time.
So how do you do that?
By asking questions.
So in let's say, you know, I'm talking about you currently leading your team. Mm-hmm. Are you constantly asking them questions?
No. And it's very difficult. And you have to be aware that you should be listening more instead of speaking more. And therefore, you need to ask the questions. What do you need from me? How can I be at your service? What should we do to make this happen? And that's very difficult. But you have to be aware of the fact that you should ask them continuously questions.
Yeah.
And raise their voices.
I'm not very good with that. So that's something that I definitely need to improve.
But I know. And I know. And I often say to them, when I talk too much, please tell me.
Mm.
And I say it not once. I think some of them are listening now. But I say it like every meeting. If I'm talking too much, please tell me.
Yeah.
Because they have to know that they can stop me from talking.
Yeah.
And we also have to understand we're humans as well.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not that what we're now all saying that we do that every day correct. Eh? There will be every day a person who can tell me that I did something wrong and who will be right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when I was 29 and I was trying to change, because I'd just gone on this leadership course and my boss at the time said, oh, you were doing so well. Then you did that one thing wrong. And in the minds of the people around you, you went back.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is opposite of what he taught me at that time, because I then felt so much pressure to constantly be this perfect person and not, you know, make old mistakes.
Yeah.
And it's like a rucksack that you're carrying around.
Yeah.
It's just so uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it's so not fair.
Yeah.
Because it's not true. It's really not true because I can tell you that every day there will be a person who tells me that I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And for that person, that's true. Even though my intention was not that, it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm really easy and like, oh yeah, I understand. And sometimes a little voice in my head also thinks, I don't like you anymore.
Mm.
And then I have to go home, sleep. And the next day I understand, okay, I have to step it up. I need to do something. But the fact that I'm doing things wrong, I'm also doing things right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a skill.
Yeah.
It's mindset. Also.
And it's not even a skill like, oh, I'm doing worse or I'm doing better. But that's just my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is my job. And I have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's make a little bit of a switch because this is Women's Visibility Week. And what I want to talk about is this thing called mentoring and how you can become a really great mentor or develop a great relationship with your mentor. Because, you know, women, there's a couple of studies that are saying that, you know, women don't get enough mentors, but there's also studies saying that they're actually over-mentored, under-sponsored. We should probably explain the difference between having a sponsor and having a mentor. A sponsor gives capital and a mentor gives advice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure. Have you had a mentor in your career?
Yeah, I've had a couple of them. And when I was younger, it was just one of my favorite uncles.
How old were you?
Until I was 12, because then he passed away.
Yeah.
But he taught me so much in how to see the world and to just say, okay, what's happening now? What kind of emotions do you have? And he already taught me then that always challenge your first emotion. Because your first emotion always says something about your past.
Is that something that they teach you in psychology class?
Yeah, later on. But he already told me. Then he always said, well, what do you feel now? Is it really true in this situation or is it something from your past?
So you carry it with you. Yeah.
And then when I became the cognitive psychologist or started studying it, they told me the same thing. And then I understood everything. But he already taught me that.
Yeah.
So that was really... when I had a job, because for me, I only had one job before I started my company. I had two men who really were my mentors, Patrick and Arjan, who with everything they said, okay, what is your idea? What's your next step? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Okay, think about this. Think about these things. But just go. When you fall, we'll be there.
Yeah.
We got your back.
Yeah.
And it really made me like, I thought that I could do everything and anything. And if I failed, which I did, they were there and they said, okay, that's your first mistake.
Yeah. That seems a little bit more like a sponsorship situation.
Think that's
sponsor? Yeah, I think because they're going an extra mile there. Rather, you know, your uncle was just giving you advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
So maybe that's a little bit more.
Yeah.
We need those too, by the way.
Yes,
I mean,
we do.
You know, I think a lot of women don't even actively look for help.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't look. So I always say you need three people, a coach, which is what you were saying, that challenges you, holds up a mirror, says, you know, this is what's great. Maybe you want to look at this again and whatever. You need a mentor who gives advice and kind of goes like, this is my experience. Like your uncle had the experience of that first emotion and he could sort of give that advice. And then you need a sponsor who says, I've got you, you know, because we want to take you from A to B. This is where we're going to go. We're going to give, you know, you the space to grow and we're going to create it together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you had a mentor, Wenke?
Not like in an official way,
no.
But I had the luck of being managed by some really great people at my work at Discovery and earlier on at Q Music. So they were like the people that I felt safe with and who I could ask any questions.
Would you have like regular lunch meetings or coffee?
On a regular basis. But those were also the people who challenged me to always have the conversation with other companies who weren't afraid of letting me go because they
weren't afraid of you losing you.
Exactly. And losing as in, losing an employee, but not losing a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was one of my first. So, I'm very curious also about you, Jayani. But when did you find yourself a mentor yourself towards another? When did you had the experience of
becoming a mentor?
Yes. What was your
after the orphan? After the boarding school. So I have, when I left the boarding school, I came back to the Netherlands and then I started my own company, but I kept mentoring the children.
Wow.
And who are now in their 20s and beginning 30s.
And you still have contact with them or?
Yeah. And they just call me and they say, they still call me Miss. I love it.
I can imagine.
It's nice.
So, oh, Miss Gianni, I have this
just
situation.
Just be glad they don't call you auntie.
Yeah.
No, Miss.
Miss.
Like you should. But they always call and say, okay, how about this and how about that? And it's really, I love it because it's you can share, you can pay it forward, and they can make better mistakes.
Yeah.
Because they will make mistakes, and that's wonderful. But sometimes, you know, and I also see with mentoring that you're only 1,000th something.
Yeah.
But when it comes together for a person, then it's really.
Yeah.
And you will never know when it is. So just keep mentoring.
Yeah. I had a couple of great mentors, actually. And they weren't officially. I didn't realize they were a mentor at the time. But now, like, you know, looking back, I know they were. So there was this one woman who I worked at a record company with, and I was about to get a new role, and she was actually getting fired. And she encouraged me to fill in the role the way that I thought was best, which never occurred to me at the time, because I thought I have to be like this other label manager. And she's like, no, the way she does it is not the way that you need to do it, which was eye-opening to me. Then I had another mentor who, this was a black man, who kept on saying to me, his big mentoring message was, you are the master of your own destiny.
Yeah.
You're the master of your own destiny. He kept repeating that to me. And then his boss, when I moved to London, became my mentor, because she would always help me analyze situations politically, like how people would behave in meetings. And she would, whenever she, because she lived in New York, and whenever she would come to London, she would actually, you know, take me out for lunch, spend time with me, mentor me in that way, and just, you know, be like, okay, this is what you need to do. And this is what I did. And just, I looked up to her so much, because she her hair was always, you know, had a blow dry, and she was always like in these impeccable suits. And then I would ask her, oh, where did you buy this? She's like, oh, it's Boss. And I'd look it up on the internet. It's like $3,000 or something. I'd be like, okay, one day
I'm going to get myself. It.
Never got it, of course, because that's not important to me. But I did love just the way that she moved in a kind of really exciting, powerful way, because, you know, she was among all these men. And it's kind of nice for a woman to be mentored. This is why our mentoring programs always have women mentoring other women. But our sponsorship programs are about men, because they're actually in those positions where they can open door. But I love that. And I realized that, I mean, I'm not an official mentor now, because there's so much going on, but I am a very unofficial mentor to my little cousins.
Of course,
to your family, a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, there's like these girls who are studying medicine or whatever business that they're doing. You know, if I've noticed that if I become more courageous, we were talking about bravery earlier on, it really rubs off on them.
Yes.
I mean, one of my cousins has got her own popcorn business and is about to start, hold up, an ice salon.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God.
Wow.
I hope, you know, the fact that she has a second business that she's starting is so exciting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember how shy she was.
Yes.
Yes.
You do. Yeah. And she's not that so shy. She's not shy. Yeah. Wow. So that really, it works, you know.
And that's also visible. Yeah. And that's also leadership. It's mentoring other people or people who want to be mentored by you.
Yeah.
Because you pay it forward for them and you are an inspiration.
Yeah. But I don't think that mentoring always has to be somebody who's older or has more experience.
No, not at all.
Because I'm always mentored by Jayati. and I'm actually older, 5 years older. So, but I think you could do it the other way around. Maybe it's reverse mentoring or something. Is that what they call it?
Yes.
Yeah, but I think it's not, everybody can be a mentor. Right? At one company, we said how the MT, your management team, should have a really young person.
Yeah.
Mm.
Put somebody there because you need that voice.
Yeah.
And then you make it official. But you can also have them mentoring the management team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about getting wisdom.
Yes. Yeah.
And every person has wisdom.
Yeah.
You don't know age, how people look. You know, you have no idea.
There's so many insights that you can share.
Exactly. A child tells you things that an adult one never does.
We kind of have a questionnaire that we put out there that we ask the mentors and the mentees this question, which was, do you have goals? Do you have mentorship goals, mentee goals that you want to achieve with your mentor? Because we were like, if they look at it from that perspective, if they look at the relationship from that, then we can make a match.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be that somebody just wants to talk to somebody.
Yeah, that's okay.
Doesn't need a...
Exactly.
But that's also a goal.
Yeah,
and that's a goal on its own.
Yeah.
And I think, but the mentee decides what it is and not the mentor.
Yeah.
The mentor sits there and says, you have the driving, you're in the driver's
seat. You're in the driver's seat.
And then all the other skills that you need as leader are there as well, being vulnerable, not only telling, oh, all the good things that you do, but mm-hmm. especially where it's really difficult. I was, a couple of weeks ago, I was at an event and everybody was talking about being an entrepreneur and, you know, how wonderful it is and things like that. And then in the end, I thought, it's not always wonderful. So I told the audience, well, to be honest, it's really nice, but it's also difficult. And it's also, you have no clue sometimes mm-hmm. what you're doing. But just start, you know, nobody knows exactly what we're doing. And then later on, people came and said, oh, that was really nice, because hearing all the good stories, it feels like, oh, I'm not sure if I can do it.
Puts pressure on you, exactly. right? It holds you back from being the entrepreneur that you want to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they already took some steps and yeah. then they hear all, you know, it pushes them back.
Yeah.
And I think that for the mentor, it's really like, I failed.
Yes.
I did not know what to do. I have no real answers for you, but together
we can figure it yes. out.
We can figure it
yeah.
out.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So to me, that's also about sisterhood. This is why we're organizing these mentorship breakfasts, but because we thought, yeah, we can email you the contact details of your mentor, but we're going to break the ice, right? Mm-hmm. Let's come together as women who are ambitious. Let's come together as women who want to be leaders, or women who want to learn from each other and create this new sisterhood, which is what we're trying to do. That's why we also created an online platform. If you look at sisterhood, what does it mean to you, and how are you currently supporting your sisters? Mm-hmm. Both ladies. I'm asking this because they're both my sisters and they're part of my sisterhood, but wow. there you go. You cannot have them. I'm not sharing them.
Of course you can.
Of course you can. We're joking, but you know.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
I think I said it once before. I'm not sure, but we have an app group. Mm-hmm. We see each other, of course, but having the group in your phone makes you powerful.
Yes.
It feels so powerful that there are 9 ladies, only one chat away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
when you feel connected.
Yeah, connected, but also carried. It's in a sense that you know that whatever will happen, you only have to say help, or yes. you only have to say, I need this, yeah. or can you help me with that? Or I have something to celebrate.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when you picked us up in a limo for our birthday.
I know, that was hilarious.
It was. It definitely was.
So we are there.
The only thing missing was a stripper. Then it would have been really like awkward.
That would be, I've been awkward, yeah. Yes. But just having to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
And, but also have, we as a group, have a sisterhood, but also with each individual.
Yeah. yeah.
Because you can find with that person, you find that. With that mm-hmm. person, you yeah. find that. And that's what the diversity that you need in a company yes. is what we have yes. in our group.
Definitely.
Yeah. So yesterday I was talking about jealousy and how we need to, when we feel that, we need to kind of delve deeper into, why are we feeling jealous? Why is this happening? And women really got lit up. Remember, Flavia? They were just like, oh my God, this is a good subject. Let's talk about this jealousy thing. Yeah. Because there was a woman out there who was saying how her mother had actually encouraged competitiveness between her and her 3 sisters. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until a year ago. So they couldn't be happy for each other. So if one sister wrote a book, yeah. another sister would be like, why the fuck didn't I write the book? Wow. And they couldn't be happy for each other. And what I love about our sisterhood, there's fairly no jealousy. I mean, maybe you might feel a pinch of it, but it kind of goes away very quickly. So we're trying to teach women how to deal with the emotion of being jealous. Because, you know, we were saying that if you're jealous, it only means you want it too.
Yes.
And yeah. that person can help you achieve it because they just did it for themselves.
Yes.
And I think it's, and you can feel jealous and you still really
yes.
think it's nice for the other
yeah,
person.
For yeah, for sure.
But when it comes down that your jealousy also doesn't, you know, that you don't really...
Yeah, I was thinking of the word.
Do you want to give it to somebody? You know,
yeah, you know, if you want to, that the other person wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
then it's damaging. And I think that's in a sisterhood, it's in friendship, who cares?
Yes.
That if you want it as well, perfect.
Yeah.
Then we go and achieve it together.
Let's get it together.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's sisterhood. It's like, and I...
But listen, it does happen.
Of course it does.
It happens.
Yeah. But yeah, it is about, there was an article about that whole thing, what happens in media right now, and about women don't gunnen. Yeah, I don't know how to say it, but in fact, you have to sit in a room with a lot of women and there are a few chances and you have to say towards yourself, okay, who in my sisterhood would I give that chance for being there?
Mm-hmm.
That's sisterhood. What it means to me is, of course, that there could be jealousy, but on the other hand,
I feel like it's the word, maybe let's say creating space for
them,
you know, like that they can have it.
Exactly. And the jealousy thing, it's something, it's something that like,
but we spoke about the difference because there were some people from the UK, from South Africa, from Germany sitting in the room, and we were actually saying that we feel it more in the Netherlands. It might be a cultural thing. Yeah, it might be a cultural thing. Women who had lived and worked abroad and then moved back to the Netherlands or came from abroad and are now working in the Netherlands, we kind of feel it more here.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's because we haven't had that conversation yet.
Could be.
A lot of things happening in the UK, you know, that I saw 20 years ago that are finally now here, conversation-wise. And also, if you look at the way leadership is divided, so if there aren't that many female leaders, we still have a scarcity mindset as women that we look at 10 position, we see one woman has it, that we think we can only replace her instead of the other nine positions. But then abroad, when there are more women leaders, you just think there are more positions to be filled. So it is kind of something that is a little bit more, you know, something that we need to be culturally aware of. I mean, just like, you know, Black Pete and Sinterklaas and people, you know, there are some things that we are still dealing with as a society.
Could be.
Yeah, and I also think that now that you mention it, it's like, you know, when a woman gets to the top, then sometimes it's like, are you helping the next generation
get there too?
To get there too and to make it easier?
Yeah, or
do you think, oh no, but what I did, they need to go through
queen
as well.
The queen bee effect.
And I think that's something that I see in organizations where there are more women at the top, but nothing changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the question is that who you or as a company want to be? And I think that's within a sisterhood. If you really have a sisterhood, then you say, it doesn't matter if I was the first one and I had to work hard for it or endure things, but the next of us will get it easier.
Yeah.
We'll do it together. We share our knowledge. Exactly. We share our wisdom. We share our pain.
Shouldn't we?
Exactly. How to make it, you know?
Why make it difficult?
Difficult, yeah.
And
just be happy.
Yeah.
So there's actually three things and then we have to finish it.
Wow.
Yes, it's already an hour.
Okay.
But so ask yourself the question, who I want to be? Who do you want to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to be at the company? Sorry. And also help the next generation. And then thirdly, which I think is also very important, the women around you should support you. So let's say you release a book or you come on TV or you get a promotion. I really feel what doesn't happen enough is that women come around you.
Yeah.
And this is why I feel sisterhood is so important. And they actually say, I'm going to help you. I'm going to make sure that you remain at that level.
And that you shine there.
That you shine, that you don't fall down.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen a lot at companies. This is something that we said yesterday at the meeting, at the breakfast as well, that how often women achieve a certain role and the women around them just disappear and they're so lonely. There was a CEO there who said she literally, when she became CEO when she got pregnant. So it was during her maternity leave, which is quite incredible. Yeah, they made her CEO then. She got back and she said, I felt so lonely. There was nobody telling me what to do, nobody helping me. You know, I really struggled for, you know, at least a year not knowing what to do and not having any help.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always saying to women, the moment if you work at a corporate company, the moment somebody makes a promotion, the first responsibility you have is to go and help her out and say, I got you.
Yes.
You can count on me. Yeah.
Yeah, here, here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Sure.
Because that's what it is. And
seems simple. But
yeah, it seems simple, but it turns out that it's not. And that's why I'm really proud of our sisterhood, because it really feels that we do yes. that. We come together to have fun, but we also come together when it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea how it feels if you don't have it, mm-hmm. because yeah. it feels so lonely then.
And yeah. safe.
And it's safe.
It feels safe when you have it.
You yeah. Especially.
And it's even different than having a family. It's not a family thing. This no. is really different.
Yeah. It's really great that we could be here today.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for inviting us. I have to make a bridge. Yeah, we have to
make
stop.
A bridge.
So you brought us this book.
Yes.
I already got it from you. It's mm-hmm. from your CEO, Michael Bush, A Great Place to Work for All.
Yep.
Better for business, better for people, better for the world. So I guess a lot of these things that we discussed were in it. We're going to give one to Jayani.
Yeah.
Thank
you
for joining us.
Yeah.
This was an incredible conversation. I really enjoyed it. It was our first live podcast. But what about you? Did you enjoy it, Wenka?
Yes, I did.
Well, thank you for inviting us here to
sure.
this special place.
Sure.
Great place to work. And yeah, I think we're going to have two more conversations, Wenka.
Yes, we will.
Looking forward to those.
Me too.
You're a great co-host.
You too.
Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.